Hi, this is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. The Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck continues this week with concerts at 7:30 p.m. both Thursday and Friday nights. The same program featuring a violin and piano duo called Duo Diorama will be featured. Duo Diorama consists of violinist Ming-Wan Shu and pianist Winston Choi, a musical couple based in Chicago. Recently, I had the chance to talk to pianist Winston Choi about their program of Bach, Brahms, William Grant Still, and John Corigliano. Winston, I know you're based in Chicago, but looking at your biography, there's a few Michigan connections to be talked about. Would you mind elaborating?
Yes, absolutely. Well, starting with my wife, Ming-Wan, she had actually spent quite a few years at the Interlochen Arts Academy, and so sees that as her first American home, essentially, after she came and immigrated from China. And since then, we did actually live near Saugatuck at one point in Holland, Michigan. Ming-Wan was a professor of violin at Grand Valley State University, just west of Grand Rapids. We have fond memories of the area and are really looking forward so much to coming back.
In your case, we can also look to a connection with our neighbor to the north, Canada.
Well, I was born in Toronto and had a wonderful time in that city. I didn't realize how much I loved the city until I left, and now miss it quite a bit. And so there's a wonderfully vibrant musical community in Toronto, wonderful training, and I have some fantastic teachers there that really had me think so much about music and going beyond the score. And so they still have a very profound influence on me. My initial piano teachers, this would be Vivian Bailey and James Tweedy. I essentially just had two main teachers throughout my first 12 years of piano study. And they were an enormous influence on me.
So I imagine you're pretty proud to say you're Canadian.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I return quite often and with Ming-Wan as well as on my own to Canada, various cities and towns to perform. And there's always this feeling of returning home every time I go back, and lots of pride to be a Canadian.
In Calgary, they have a great competition for pianists, the Honans competition. And I know you competed there.
Yes. Yeah, that's an incredible competition in the sense that they look out for you so much after you're done. Most young artists, we don't have any real education in what to do with ourselves beyond music after we are finished with our formal education. Honans is fantastic in the sense that they make you think a little bit about your strength, how to package yourself. It's not about trying to find something artificial and to latch on to that, but they want you to really search deep within and find something that really sparks you and to hone it and fine-tune it, bring it to the forefront of our, you know, the consciousness of your image. So in a sense, they help you develop and refine your artistic voice, make you think about programming, and then really so many practicalities of the musical world and business. It really helped artists get a foot in the door and really, you know, launch you off space. So it's a wonderful organization.
Yeah, thinking along those lines, I see a lot of new releases every week all through the year. Lots of musicians churning out music. And when I clicked on your webpage and had a look at your recorded repertoire, CDs, my eyes got wide when I realized you seem to be choosing music from out of the generally beaten down path by every other pianist. And I thought that made you pretty special. And it also saw that you commission a lot of works too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in effect, you kind of, I guess as a musician, you're a sponge and you soak up whatever comes your way. And you develop a certain kind of a reputation. And that's kind of what happened with myself as I got started, as well as with our duo, is that many composers reached out to us and either wrote music for us or asked us to premiere their works. And it's wonderful to get the chance to work with a living composer, a young creative spirit, and to have a real dialogue about what the music means to them and how we can add our own touch, our own twist to this existing score or a newly written score. And so a lot of the recordings that you're referencing that I recorded came out of these kinds of collaborative processes, meeting various composers and having this shared goal of just, you know, spreading the message of having the music be heard by as many people as possible.
Speaking of Duo Diorama, now's a good time to segue to that. How seriously do you take this project as a duo with your wife, Ming Huan, as violinist, balanced with your solo life?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's something that we both come to the duo in the sense that it was what brought us together. Our musical collaboration almost existed beyond our marriage, beyond our own relationship with each other. That's what kind of started us all off. So every time we come to play together, it's a wonderful melding of our spirits together. And we've found a way to work together so that, you know, everything is quite efficient and we complement each other nicely in terms of our musical energy. Yet I think at the same time, because we come from different musical schools, different backgrounds, and we've pursued our own various concert career and solo work, as well as other kinds of mixed chamber music. So when we come together, we bring our own different experiences together, and I think it's an essential part of what we do. We both pursue solo careers as well as playing in various ensembles together. So sometimes we do play music not just as a duo, but we're playing together with other musicians as well, which is also a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Hard to resist trio and quartet repertoire, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Let's have a look at the program that you're performing at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck. We will be looking at some 20th century music here, but you have a Bach sonata to start.
Yes. Well, you know, of course, everybody knows the sonatas and partitas for solo violin.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bach keyboard music is such a staple of every pianist's repertoire growing up. One of the first composers that we associate with is Bach. As soon as we can start moving our fingers around and start playing two-part inventions. So the language of Bach is, of course, very familiar to both violin and piano. But these violin and keyboard sonatas are not played nearly as much. They are just as wonderful, and what's amazing is the musical interchanges and exchanges that are happening. We often think about Bach's music as being something that can be easily transcribed from between instrument to instrument, that it's, even though it's very idiomatic in terms of how it's written, the music works very well going back and forth between any combination of instruments. And you clearly can see a lot of that throughout the sonata, especially the fast movements when a lot of the material is like contrapuntal or fugal in nature and fits together like these little intricate Lego pieces, as it's this incredible puzzle that's pieced together. Some of the, of course, the slower movements are more vocal in nature and treats the violinist more as a very florid, lyrical
line while the keyboard is essentially acting as a supportive partner. So it's a wonderful, wonderful piece.
Are you familiar with any recordings of this? There's one I dearly love in our record library with Rachel Podger and Trevor Pinnock on harpsichord.
I don't know that one.
The interplay, it seems absolutely equal. I mean, it seems to be of the era where you put the forte piano or the harpsichord first in the title. It's almost a different concept of sonata.
Mm-hmm. I would say there's in the fast movements, it's essentially equal. So intricate that it could have been written, you know, as some kind of a trio for three instrumentalists. Or it could be a very complicated keyboard work with an extra voice on top. But the lyrical movements, I would say, is more clearly melody. And, I mean, it's all written out so that there's not a whole lot of room for one to treat the keyboard part like it's continuous. It's really fully notated and realized. So in the slower movements, one can see it's much more melodic than the violin part and supportive underneath with the piano or harpsichord.
Have you, with Mingwan, identified any danger points or pitfalls in performing Bach's music?
Well, I guess there's always that kind of age-old question when we approach music of this era, is how much authenticity do we want to consider putting into it? And that term is always a slippery slope once you go down that route, because you know, everything that we're doing in terms of the authenticity movement is based upon reading, based upon passed down tradition. So at the most, we're getting just, you know, an aspect of it. And sometimes one can miss out on the bigger picture as one tries to recreate something. However, I think we're both very fascinated by performance practice.
After the Bach sonata that opens the program, you're going to play a sonata by Johannes Brahms. And while we know Brahms greatly admired composers of the past, it's a big jump to move from the Baroque era to the romantic sound world of Brahms.
Absolutely. Well, Brahms, this sonata, we find it, you know, even though it's so-called first sonata to violin and piano, it's not one of his early works. He was very mature at the time that he wrote it, having written quite a bit, of course, for solo piano. The basic premise of it is quite happy, but when we hear it in the beginning, it sounds like bright sunshine, and then it's like tears of sadness in the last moment. So, yeah, it's a wonderfully rich piece of music that we truly enjoy so much to play, and of course, the interchange between us is much fuller and richer. Most of the music is quite interchangeable in terms of how we pass ideas back and forth. There's no real sense of one instrument being inferior or secondary to the other. But it's this—it's really thinking about the Brahms is thinking about the sonorities of the piano, the sonorities of the sustained violin, and in a sense, getting the piano to be more into the world of string chamber music, orchestral concepts with sound.
Now, I'd love the transition after this. We have a piece from the 20th century by someone that's often dubbed the Dean of African American Composers, William Grant Still.
William Grant Still's music is not played nearly as much as it should, but we find it very vibrant. Of course, you know, the mother and child, this movement is so beautiful and just speaks to everybody. But it's really, of course, what draws us to the music is just the heart and soul of it. And, you know, the fact that it combines, you know, various kinds of Black American spirituals, ragtime, blues, and jazz, you know, into this classical, it makes it even more enticing for us to play. You know, there are many moments that cause us to chuckle, you know, as musicians as we're playing, and I think it's certainly a piece of music that, you know, of course, it's not only lighthearted. There is profound beauty to it, but there's simply an infectious kind of energy to it that is hard to resist.
And finally, let's talk about the John Corigliano Sonata for violin. Mm-hmm. This is a composer who loves violin.
Well, John Corigliano's father was the former concertmaster of the New York Philharmonic. And so he, you know, there's quite a touching story about this work, that he had written it and intended, of course, for his father to play it. And his father never really showed any true interest in the work and would congratulate his son for writing it, but really didn't pay it any attention until it was performed successively over and over and over by many other violinists that praised it. Then John Corigliano Sr. came around. And so it's such a piece that we actually had the pleasure of working with John Corigliano on the sonata a few years back. And I remember that story and how personal it was for him, because he was seeking his father's approval so desperately, and this was the piece that he got it, yet it wasn't such an easy road to get there.
Tell me about some of the musical flavors that John employs in the piece.
Sure. Well, it's what we find really incredible about it is that there is a tremendous amount of life, vitality to it. Of course, there is the rhythmic interplay. You get a sense of, you know, Copland in it. And in terms of the Americana, that's a lot of the tunes, the emotions that are evoked, you know, the jerky rhythms, yet at the same time there's profound lyricism throughout. You'll also find, you know, it's thickly scored. You can imagine it being very orchestral in nature and orchestral in its conception. So I would say, for the most part, it has a rather romantic feel, but it's alternating between that and something that is, you know, heavily influenced by Stravinsky and Copland.
Is it fun?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun to play. I think it's a lot of fun to listen to. It certainly is a lot of work. It's known as one of the most difficult sonatas ever written for this particular, you know, instrumental duo combination. So it's full of acrobatics, a lot of twists and turns, and, you know, it takes a considerable amount of time to put together. It has received many performances throughout the years, but not as many as it should have, and that's a large part due to the fact that it is so difficult to put together and, you know, needs a certain kind of commitment.
Finally, I just want to visit with you a little longer and ask about how you ended up in Chicago. And it seems from, you know, my distance that you've actually had a lot of luck in having the kind of career you might want to have.
Yes, absolutely. You never know where, you know, the music world will take you. And it's a profession, unlike many other professions, you cannot simply put your finger on a map and say, let's go there and let's do everything that we can to find success, you know, in terms of how you want to see that success. It's very difficult. The number of positions for teaching music in higher institutions is very, very limited. There's only a handful of institutions per city. so it's there was a lot of luck involved. We were students at one point at Northwestern University up in Evanston, Illinois, and we're always thinking about Chicago, how it would be nice to spend more time in the city. And then after we left, thinking how we wish we had more time to spend in the city. It's sad that we had to say goodbye without ever getting to really know Chicago. And then things just kind of fell into place. I am the head of the piano program at Roosevelt University in downtown Chicago, and Minghwan is on the violin faculty there as well. She also coaches the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, and we've both been quite active in the local music scene, and it's just a wonderfully vibrant place to call home, and it's a great musical base to have. So, yes, certainly many things all kind of fell into place. Once the door was open, a crack. Once we could come back to Chicago, we've certainly felt like this is our musical home.
Well, I think we're kind of fortunate here in Michigan that you're still fairly close, and we might see a lot of you on the west coast of Michigan, and certainly at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck.
We always love coming back to Michigan, every chance that we get. So we look forward to sharing our music with audiences there.
I spoke with pianist Winston Choi, who with his wife, violinist Minghwan Shu, will appear at the Chamber Music Festival of Saugatuck this week on Thursday and Friday nights at 7:30 p.m. Details are available at saugatuckmusic.org. I'm Kara LaRance, and you're listening to WMUK 102.1 FM, Music NPR, Local Arts and News from Western Michigan University.